Hello and welcome to GuardCast, a podcast that offers insight to soldiers and civilians from subject matter experts across the board. I'm your host, Sergeant Joseph Goldsmith, and thank you for tuning in. Thank you for joining us, everyone. Today in the hot seat, we have Lieutenant Imes, XO of Charlie Company. So Sean Imes is a public health professional and entrepreneur with a passion for public service. He holds undergraduate degrees in biology and sociology from the University of South Carolina, Beaufort, and a master's degree in public health with a certificate in disaster management from Benedictine University, and he has an extensive background in clinical medicine and emergency response. Sean is currently a first lieutenant and the executive officer of Charlie Company, 3rd Battalion, 1st Civil Support Brigade with the South Carolina State Guard, where he serves the Guard in many active capacities. Sean resides in Port Royal, where he shares a home with two of his five children, two precocious kittens, one oversized rabbit, and a very relaxed guinea pig called Gizmo. Lieutenant Imes, great to have you on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
So today we're going to discuss breaking down the components of an individual company within a battalion. So chain of command, you know, platoons versus squads, all that great stuff. But you are the resident expert on this. You are a subject matter expert. So I'm gonna turn this mic over to you, sir.
Sure. So, you know, South Carolina State Guard, like a lot of the state guards, follows an Army format. And of course, we don't have as many moving parts at the State Guard level as you do even at the National Guard or the active Army level. So we use an abbreviated version of a lot of the structures that they use. But at the company level, we're broken into some different sections. We have what a lot of people refer to as a headquarter company or a segment within the company. But really for us, we just refer to it as our command staff group. And that is all the S sections are contained within that group. That's the CO, the XO, the S1 through 6, the chaplain. And if we have a single company medic, then we house them at that level in the command structure. Excuse me. So working down from there, we break down into as many platoons as we can man. In Charlie Company currently, we're just functioning with one platoon. We've got pretty close. We're usually roughly around 30 people total in the company. We're one of the heavier ones in the battalion for manning. But so we will have a platoon leader, which is an officer, and then a platoon sergeant, so usually a senior NCO. And then within Charlie Company, we're broken down into two squads. So we'll have a squad leader. And then from there, we do something a little bit different. We add another layer, and that's a fire team. And what that does is it breaks the platoon group into smaller operational groups. Mm-hmm. And it just allows for a little more continuity and communication. And what I mean by that is specifically, it allows one person to have less people to communicate with. So we do a recall somewhat regularly. In fact, we've got one coming up very soon, probably within a week or two. And those recalls are practice callbacks. So because we are not active duty forces, everybody's off doing their own thing. What we do is enact a recall, which would be similar to what would happen if we were activated by battalion or by division. And we would get a call. And from there, we would call down the command chain and do a callback, you know, engage people to make sure you can communicate with them and to make sure that they're responding in a timely manner. And we just found that breaking it down that many divisions, the callback response time was actually faster because mm-hmm. we've got more people at every level covering less people. So you're working more laterally rather than vertically in that structure.
And that's a good point. The typical structure that I've experienced throughout the State Guard and other state defense forces from the company level down, you know, just standard like we had discussed or like you sure. had discussed, you know, it's company, platoon, and then squads. You know, you have first squad, first platoon, second squad, first platoon, third squad, etc. Mm-hmm. And then you've got your squad leader for each. So you have those five man teams. or five person teams, making up a platoon. But I definitely see where Charlie Company's coming from with that fire squad. And sure. I know that fire squad is used a lot in the Marines. Army
structure. Yeah, fire teams. It's because of that. They're really about breaking it down. You know, we've heard a lot lately because of what's going on in Ukraine about the differences in command structures in different foreign armies. And for instance, the Russians, they use, I can't remember the term, I think it's a BTE, but basically they're an extremely vertical command structure. And if you knock any of those pegs out of that line, it breaks the chain because they don't cross train. So they don't backfill well. Whereas this type of an organization that the US Army uses, and of course the entire United States military uses, is very much about layering redundancy in. So that if something were to happen, the line closes back up, and it is vertical, obviously, but it's a lot more fleshed out in the horizontal. Exactly. So that people can slide back and forth more readily.
Which is really smart, you know, whether you're a warfighter or a disaster response, you know, you just need to be able to plug a hole.
Yeah, we refer to it as a self-healing command structure. Mm-hmm. You know, it fills in any cracks or any holes, because invariably, of course, we're all consumers of war movies. You know, it's always the radio guy and the platoon sergeant or whoever that gets knocked off first. And rather than just disintegrating, everybody just sort of flows back into that opening and fills the gap.
Exactly. So within Charlie Company, which mm-hmm. You are the XO, the executive officer of Charlie Company, can you talk about what the roles and responsibilities are of being an XO of any company for that matter?
Sure. Well, I can speak from my own experience because I, of course, haven't been in other organizations in that capacity, but the XO is, the best way I can liken it is the XO is kind of like being the fulcrum in a teeter totter, okay, in a seesaw, right? Yeah. So your CEO has ultimate command responsibility for the entire company, obviously, but your CEO spends a lot of time being the bridge between the company and battalion. And as such, they are integrating information from on high down to the XO for dissemination or action. And they are taking information from the company level through the XO back to the CO and then off to battalion, brigade, or division. Mm-hmm. So the XO is really the functional part of the company. They're the ones that push things down and push buttons to get things to happen. And they're the ones that reintegrate that information, compartmentalize it for dissemination back up the chain. And of course, for the CO, so that the CO can make command decisions based on concise, well-packaged packets of information rather than all the minutiae that goes along with everyday functionality. So the XO effectively becomes the person that integrates the top to the bottom in both directions.
Right. Now, for those individuals that might be considering enlisting, non-prior, et cetera, that just might not know this, I'm going to be that guy and ask this question, you know, to answer the one that's out there. If I'm a private, mm-hmm. would I ever come and talk to you as the XO of a company?
There are times. It depends on what the circumstances are. Charlie Company works very hard to maintain an esprit de corps that is not prohibitive, meaning we're not trying to tell people you can't talk to us. There's a difference between, you know, everyday conversation or maybe, you know, shooting the bull mm-hmm. and between work. Okay. So we try to make the soldiers understand that work-related things have to follow the chain of command. Okay. Don't casually bring up to me that, you know, you got trench foot and you've been asking for boots for 6 weeks. Don't tell me that. I need you to tell your fire team leader or your squad leader that and have them process that appropriately. Right. But we try not to discourage conversation because sometimes things come up in those conversations that give me a better read on the totality of the landscape. Even if it's not something I need to address with that person, it gives me a better read and it allows me an opportunity to ask questions of my command line so that I get a better sense of what's actually going on. So yeah, sure, there's absolutely times when a private would be, you know, shooting the breeze with the XO, as it were. Mm-hmm. That's really a process that is developed by an individual's managerial style. I'm not a pull from the front or push from the back manager. I'm a middle of the group. If you're in it, I'm in it. And we are pushing and pulling one another. And everybody has a different command style. I've got people in my command chain that are very much, you know, swords up and charging ahead. And I got guys that are pushing the baby ducks along. And I got guys that are just like me, guys and gals. I shouldn't be restrictive in that regard because we certainly have both. But at the end of the day, the military structure is no different really than a management structure in private industry. And I think that people spend so much time, especially non-prior service folks who don't have any experience. If you were to take away trying to memorize all of the working components of military ease and understand that an XO is sort of equivalent to like a regional manager, right? You have an executive vice president that comes down to them and says, you're on my team. This is what you got to do. Tell me what's going on. That's kind of the position that I'm in, mm-hmm. right? I've got a big area of responsibility, but my area goes up and down. Whereas the CO is more lateral with his fellow, you know, senior VPs and then with the CEO. So don't get intimidated by that. If you've had any experience in business at all and following directions, these things are applicable, right? They plug in. You just have to learn the jargon, which right. is, you know, say it comes easier to some than others, but it's essentially that. So yeah, in the securitous mode of my answer, yes, there are times and we encourage some open dialogue.
Absolutely. And I remember way back when I was first, you know, considering enlisting and whatnot, I had spoken with some colonels. You know, I picked up the phone and I called Olympia Armory and sure. I was passed down, you know, and oh, you're going to want to talk to this person. Oh, you're going to want to talk to this person. I'm just bouncing mm-hmm. from colonel to colonel and command sergeant major and this and that. And the one thing that I vividly remember everybody saying, they said, look, son, it doesn't matter if you're a private or if you're a colonel. When the time comes, everybody is going to be in it and everybody is going to be raising a tent. Everybody, you know, everybody's going to be getting their hands dirty. There is right. no, well, I'm a captain, so I don't do those things. They, right. You know, right. I'm a command sergeant major, so I don't do it. They said that's not how we operate. Right. You know, everybody helps everybody, you know, and it's just the yeah. understanding of, hey, my experience level might be here, but your experience level for this particular thing, even though you might be a lower grade than I am, your experience level might be here. So we're going to rely on your experience level for that. And I remember that having a very significant impact on my decision to come sure. in. You know, and yeah. I've enjoyed watching that, you know, and I've seen it firsthand.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen you step up to the plate quite a few times and say like, no, this. And everyone just went, okay, you know, because yeah. they know that, you know, what you're talking about in that scenario.
Right. And that's a big part of that is building that rapport with your troops. Mm-hmm. You can't just, it's very difficult. I don't want to say you can't, because I'm not a big person about infinitives, but it's very difficult to step into that position cold mm-hmm. and be efficient. You know, efficiency is very much like breaking an engine in, right? Yeah, it runs. It does the mechanical things it needs to do. But if you tax that system too greatly, you're more likely to blow it up than to make it run better. You have to ease into that sort of thing. And a big part of that is building that rapport with your soldiers. And in my command experience, and I take a great deal from my commanding officer, who's a retired Marine. He is He's very good at letting people know where he stands. And he does that by standing with them. Because I think it's very difficult to lead troops in any capacity, from the fire team leader up to the CEO, if they think that you're above them. So in the fray, you know, it's understood that there is a hierarchy or a chain of command. But when you're in the fray, that becomes less of, I didn't check with that person. And it becomes more of, we good? Good. And moving on. So it's less stilted and mechanical. The less things that are going on, the less activity that's occurring, it becomes very mechanical. Okay. So if it's just an everyday interaction, say during a drill, it's very formal and stiff. But the trick with this is to build your team, because at the end of the day, we're a team.
Right.
You build your team in a way where they know, A, that you know what you're doing, B, you know what they know what they're doing. Everyone is confident in everybody else's skills and the skill of the person to their left and right, in front and in back of them. And as such, we begin to move in a more fluid motion.
Right.
And I think that's critical. I really do. And you can be as much a part of that circumstance in anything that you're doing as you want, but you can also be on the outside looking in. And we occasionally get those that are, they're better than everybody else, or they know more than everybody else. And you can't encourage that along, but that happens in any volunteer situation, in any paid organization, in active duty military, happens all the time. You know, you've always got that private pile that's on the outside spinning to the left when everybody else is spinning to the right.
Right.
So,
But one thing, though, that I will say with that, and using our battalion specifically as that example, I mean, look at this past deployment that we just did. We had that brand new private that just came in to Alpha Company, and she had only been in just long enough to get all of her certs and her quals and everything that she needed to go on this deployment, and she integrated perfectly.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, there were questions, but it was one of those. Because like you were saying, you know, you trust the person, you know, to your sides, you know, to your 12, to your six. And because all of that is already there, and our battalion at large has that mutual trust between all the companies, that integration, regardless of where you are, is so fluid that you're, you know, this young soldier with zero experience went right into this deployment perfectly.
Sure. And that's part of, you know, we have a good command group in the battalion. I mean, it's at the end of the day, that's really what it boils down to. And when I say good command group, what I specifically mean is we know each other and they know what your abilities and your limitations are. And people will move into your column and you will move into their column fluidly to be able to backfill in areas where maybe you're not as confident or you're not fully up to speed yet. But that's part of a good command structure. Is it's not rigid, it's fluid. It's a constantly evolving body. And that young private's a great example of that. She comes in, she's barely in for a minute, right? She has all of her basic qualifications, but effectively, she is, if she were left on her own, she's not fieldable on her own because she's just not experienced. She doesn't have the greater picture of things. But the beauty of these command structures, especially working down the chain, is that the person right above you is supposed to put their arm around you and help A, get you where you need to be, and B, make sure that you don't go someplace you're not supposed to go, figuratively speaking, and end up on somebody's, you know, call sheet for injured or worse. So that's why you can plug in a new entity and they start to move in the same battle rhythm as everyone else, because that's what you're doing when you're building your command structure. That's what you're doing when you put people into fire team leaders or squad team leaders or platoon leader positions, is you have to evaluate that person for their capabilities individually, but also their ability to move in synchronicity with the rest of the unit. And I think we do a good job of that in the battalion. you're always going to have issues. There's always going to be something that comes up. But, you know, like the old saying is, it's not the quality of a man is not determined by how they handle things when times are good, but when times are bad. So you try to build your team in a way that they can accommodate things when things go sideways, because something always goes sideways.
Oh yeah,
we never have a mission that goes off to the letter. It just doesn't exist in the reality of the world. I think you've been in one of my classes, have you not? And one of the things that I say repeatedly is, hey, here's the thing. I can teach you the textbook version, and I will, because I'm required by the responsibility of this course to teach you the textbook version. But then we're going to set that aside, and I'm going to tell you how it actually happens in the real world.
Exactly.
And that's the, if you walk through this door 58 times, you're going to get 67 different outcomes.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is.
And that's the truth. That actually just happened. That again, going to this past deployment, everything in the capacity that I was in, everything was perfect. Everything was, and I can't go into details, but everything was set up the way it needed to be set up. And sure enough, about a half hour into it, dead. Everything just was done. And myself and two other, calling them individuals, were just standing there going, well, this isn't good.
Like we were talking about in the pre-interview, you know, improvise, adapt, and overcome. I mean, that's right. The
and we did, day. You know, but it was one of those things where, and the after action report, and that's where you were just going with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, you, that's why you have an after action report. That's why you move through, because you're the thing is it's, you know, these after action reports are like NTSB reports for plane crashes, right? Mm-hmm. Something went wrong. It's not about whether something did. It is something went wrong through this process. It always does. And you learn from that. You build new tools, or you acquire new tools, and you build new processes to prevent that in the future. And then the next time you do it, that doesn't go wrong, but something else goes wrong.
Yep.
Because it's a constant fluid movement. The one thing that I teach my soldiers and that I teach any soldiers that I get in contact with is that your butt needs to be on a ball bearing, right? You cannot be static. If you are fixed to the earth, you're going to crash and burn. Mm-hmm. You can't, and that's in emergency management across the board. You have got to be mobile at all times. The one thing I need to teach you more than any other thing is something that I can't teach you, and that's flexibility. You've got to be able to move your feet and keep in the battle rhythm, because the second you lose that flexibility, you're like the big oak tree, right? You get blown over and you become a statistic. And at the end of the day, it's about bringing them all out and bringing them all back, right? Preferably with less dents in the fender than, you know, more. But, and that's really just, it's just so integral to everything that we do in an emergency management, emergency response, disaster response, which is of course our core mission, you know, platform, is to be able to think on your feet. Mm-hmm. And that's, I tell my students when I'm teaching in the guard or wherever, that I can tell you what you need to know, but I can't teach you how to think. You have got to be able to instantaneously push back, see the bigger picture, zoom back in on the detail, and then push back out to see how that detail is now flowing with the other details. You've got to be able to be flexible.
And obviously that is very, very important for an XO to be able to have that perspective, for a CO to have a perspective, but again, all the way down to a private, which this whole conversation has just been one giant circle. You know, we've come full circle. So, which is exactly the point. That's what we wanted to do. So in your personal life, you know, your civilian job, I'm assuming for you, there is an incredible amount of crossover. You know, all the philosophy that you have as an XO, your workflow, your efficiency is also utilized in your civilian life. If you want to kind of expand on that a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. There's always going to be crossover in any of this, as long as you're taking, let me move backwards for a second on that. If you become too myopic, if you get too close to the situation, you're going to miss the parallels and the connections and the cross-linking that happens in the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. So it's important that when you're let's say that you're Joe Schmuckatelli, as we say, you know, man on the street, and you're thinking about coming into a state defense force, a state guard force. And you're like, oh, I have no prior service. I just don't know if I can do this. It's so much military, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know. The thing is it's almost identical to what you do in the civilian world in whatever capacity that you serve, whether you're in retail or food and beverage or the construction industry or medicine or law enforcement, it doesn't matter. Whatever you're doing in the civilian world, it plugs in. Okay. I own a business. I'm a carpenter. I build cabinetry and furniture, do remodel work, that sort of thing. So of course I've had many employees over the years, and that has helped me to become a more efficient supervisor. I worked for the state of South Carolina through DHEC, and I had a team under me, and it required a lot of up and down movement of information and integration. But even if you're, let's say you're a teller at a gas station, you think, oh, well, I don't have anybody under me. I don't command anything. I don't lead people. Sure you do. You have customers that come through the door whose personal safety and comfort and satisfaction are your responsibility. You set a tone that drives that interaction because you are the authoritarian person in that position. I don't care if you make $9 an hour working at that register, you are in charge of that area and the people that come in and out. Simple as that. So don't ever think that your experiences are not adequate to a greater task. It's all scalable. Mm-hmm. So maybe you have responsibility for an average of 3 or 4 people that come through the door. Well, then you go on to, I don't know, name any big box store, and now you're responsible for 30 or 40 people that are in your scope of you know, view. It's all scalable, and it's every bit of it plugs in. The problem that we run into in the Guard, and I'm sure in active duty, is when people come in and they see the two things as separate, and they're not trying to link those two things and use that experience. They're trying to create a holistically independent, mutually exclusive, you know, a dome of information. And that's a fool's errand, because everything that we do every day plugs in. Mm-hmm. You just have to figure out how it works and how it can work for you, and what things are not directly applicable. And really, those things are usually interactions.
Yeah. You know? And I think that's just a folly of Western society at large, is we almost want that separation to be there. You know, because we've, like I said, we digest a lot of war stories and movies and all this stuff. And we want this to be this, no, it's this way. And then this is my personal life, and this is the military life, or this is the business. Right. And no, you talk to anybody that's been in it for longer than a few months at any level. And no, it's all about that crossover, that bleed.
Sure. Sure. In the study of sociology, one of the big things that we discuss is role structures, you know, role interactions. And that's how I interact with you. Am I interacting with you more as a peer, or you as a superior or an inferior, for lack of a better term? That role positioning tells me preemptively how I should interact with my priest or my doctor or the lady behind the counter at the gas station or the librarian, right? And it's the same thing, but I think you're right. I think that there is some fallacy in the Western mentality that makes us want to compartmentalize those things. And I think that has to do with prestige, that we want to have this prestige of having these independently functioning selves.
Right.
But the reality is, it's just not the way that society works. It's a network of interactions and across professional lines. Yeah.
And I was guilty of that when I first, you know, I needed to have this very, you know, boxed up, stoic, you know, and it's just, and I love watching, you know, on YouTube or any social media, you know, the Greenhorn Lieutenant, you know, how it's all staged, of course, but you know, there's somebody standing there with a cell phone, and then there's soldiers sitting around, and they said, you know, Greenhorn Lieutenant walks in and, you know, starts barking orders and this and that, and why aren't you standing up straight, and, or, you know, standing at attention, blah, blah, blah. And then it said, you know, captain, you know, captain comes into the room and everyone stands up and is now at ease.
Right.
It's just that, like, we don't have time for that. You know,
it's that progress though. It's that progression in professional self. I mean, you got to think a second lieutenant, a fresh second lieutenant, they catch a lot of crap, right?
They navigate.
They can't, you know, they're yelling at sergeant majors. You know, there's this whole persona that's given to the second lieutenant. And let's be honest, the reality of that is that many second lieutenants, the vast majority of them that come in, don't come in with an ego. They don't come in too stupid to read a compass. They're usually highly experienced and highly trained in their own areas. And yeah, there's always a learning curve integrating into the military model. And that's, I think, more so for direct commission or LDOC type of positions. Right. But a line officer that's coming in fresh, you're going to have to, again, like I said earlier, you have to earn your place in there. I've said it before to many people, that rank gives you a seat at the table, a specific seat at the table. It doesn't give you any respect. Right. And it doesn't give you the appreciation or the admiration of your troops. You earn those things. And those things are critical to being able to function in your position. But we give the second lieutenants coming in a pretty bad rap, but most of them are very, very good at it. But absolutely. The fact is that cliches are cliches for a reason, because they happen enough to make them, you know, be able to be pointed out. But I think it swings back in this, again, circuitous conversation, that it swings back to the fact that that is a process of youth, not as a factor of age, but a factor of experience.
Right.
And once you get comfortable in a leadership role, then you are less likely to lead with bravado, because that bravado frequently is just you faking it till you make it.
Right.
And the guys pick up on that, and they will just be merciless with you if you do that. They're going to make sure that you know that they don't appreciate it.
Oh yeah. So, you're trying to just prove it to yourself. You're not even
sure. And that's really it.
Like letting go of that pride, you know, coming in and whether we are talking, you know, a second lieutenant or even a junior NCO, you know, because I would say that, you know, even
it's the same thing.
Exactly. It's the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And coming back to the way that our, at least specifically speaking with our battalion, I just haven't seen that, you know. There's been some moments where, you know, somebody's got to go, excuse me, is this thing on?
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, I'm talking right now. You know what I mean? It's like one of those types of moments. Yeah. But
that happens in those other battalions.
But you know, it's rare though. I have found it to be very rare.
It really is.
And it's only in extreme cases, where, and it could even be just something where there's just a lot of camaraderie happening.
Sure.
And, but because everybody is, I don't want to say so comfortable around each other. I mean, we are, and that is a good thing, but it's in those moments where we are just trying to get some attention, you know, and everybody is just freely having a conversation that the brass needs to come out a little bit.
Right.
You know, and that's where being able to fall back on that chain of command, you know, in that company structure. And if you're standing there in your, because everybody does generally kind of hang together anyway.
Sure.
You know, and your squad leader standing there and you're not in formation or anything, but you're just spending time. And all of a sudden you see them stand up. You're going to be attentive to that. Why? Because you respect that individual, because you know that they have more experience over you or whatever the case might be.
Right.
And all of that then feeds back up, makes the company look better, makes the XO look better, the CO, makes battalion, et cetera, ad nauseum.
Sure. So. It's difficult, you know, because we're dealing at the end of the day with we are a volunteer organization. Okay. And, you know, most of the military really is volunteer because we don't have a draft. Right.
Right.
So, but you know, we are, I think everybody struggles for their own validity. And this is the crap rolls downhill model of things that happen. You know, we are struggling to remain valid with our National Guard counterparts, right? In their, how we interact with them. So we have to bring our professionalism, you know, anytime that we interact with them directly, because we're trying to prove to them that we deserve our seat at the table. Mm-hmm. The National Guard does the same thing with active duty Army.
Absolutely.
Right. And everybody makes fun of the Coast Guard and now Space Force. Thankfully for the Coast Guard, we now have Space Force so that, you know, so that make fun of them. Yeah,
it's all in good fun. I'm a fan of the Space Force, not so much some of their policies, but I am a fan of them, you know.
Did you ever see that on Netflix? Have you seen the Space Force?
No, I haven't. I haven't Steve watched Carell. It yet. Yeah,
my favorite part of it is their service uniform is blue, a blue field with little moons all over it. Yeah, it's
great. I am like going to watch it at some point. I want to.
But I'd say that all in jest because the fact of the matter is there's a lot of cross chatter between, you know, the Navy and the Marine Corps and Army and Navy. But that's part of the esprit de corps. You know, right. At the end of the day, it's kind of like getting into a domestic situation, right? You walk in on a domestic and you've got person A and person B wailing each other, and person C interjects, they turn, A and B turn on C, and then go back to A and B. Right. It's the same thing. If you think that we don't get along, put us in a corner and see how that works out for you.
Yeah.
Right. At the end of the day. But
right.
But that's part of building that team esprit de corps, is there has to be some competitiveness and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And we do it. You've seen it between the companies, you know, any chance that my CO gets in a room with a mixed group of people, he always finds a way to yell out at usually a very awkward time that Charlie Company is the best damn company in the entire State Guard.
Yeah.
Right. And everybody looks at him and shoots him a dirty look. And then it starts a 10 minutes and then it goes back to normal. But
it's part of the love
that's built in this family. Mm-hmm. Because this is not, at the end of the day, this is not an easy thing to do.
Right.
It's just not, this isn't volunteering at your local library. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have the potential to be in very dangerous situations. Right. We have the potential to be in situations where potentially there could be mass casualties.
And have been.
And it's you have to get right in your head. And part of that is learning to cut loose when you can. Part of that is learning to develop that, you know, I usually call it a humor callus. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, you default to humor when you want to just cry. I mean, for lack of a better thing. Yep. Because it is and can be stressful, but it's also very rewarding. Mm-hmm. There's nothing more rewarding in my mind in this life than training, preparing, and then being able to enact that to serve your local community or your state. And these defense forces are in a unique position to be able to do that in a really benevolent way. Many of these forces are not paid in any way. Many of them provide a lot of their own personal kit out of pocket, pay their own transport cost at times, provide their own meals and that sort of thing. And it takes a fairly special person. And I'm not personally very special, but I'm very blessed to be engaged with a lot of men and women who are incredibly dedicated to this effort and do so with a grace and a professionalism that really sets them apart from the average person.
That was poetry.
Okay. I get one every once in a while.
Couldn't have been a better closer on that one. So I, Lieutenant Imes, I really appreciate you coming on today.
Certainly.
This was a phenomenal, phenomenal guard cast. And for everybody listening and watching, I really, really, really hope that Lieutenant Imes's words hit home for you, that they have maybe fertilized that seed, put some water on that seed, and now it's growing, you know, and if you're interested, if you have questions, comment below. Okay. Reach out. You know, we're all on social media, you know.
Absolutely.
And if you live here on the coast of South Carolina, you know, I'm up in the Myrtle Beach, you know, Myrtle's Inlet area, that Grand Strand. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Sergeant Imes, Lieutenant Imes, he's down in the Beaufort area.
Yep.
Okay.
We're bookending it here. We've got the whole 3rd Battalion AO framed out. But and I mean, I can, anybody that has any questions of me specifically, reach out. I'll be happy to give you my email and ask away. Whatever you'd like to know, I'm happy to help.
Sounds good. I appreciate you coming on today, sir. I really, really do.
It's my pleasure.
And we'll definitely make sure that we have you on again.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye now.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it, and I'll see you in the next episode. This is Sergeant Joseph Goldsmith, out.